You're listening to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC that examines current issues affecting boys, teachers of boys, and boys' schools. I'm Tom Batty, Executive Director of IBSC, and it is indeed a pleasure to welcome you to another episode. Over the decades, there has been a tendency in schools to consider what works best in the last year of schooling and then map it backwards through the younger years. Countering this, I increasingly note attention being given to consideration of routines, activities, and school day structures that, instead, best suit each particular key stage of development, and thence, all subsequent years. Leading the pack has been Headmaster Chris Post, and the leadership team of the Boys Latin School of Maryland in Baltimore, US. In this episode, Bruce Collins, IBSC Director of Membership Engagement, interviews Chris and his divisional leadership team about their innovative approach to creating a boy-friendly school. Sparked by a post-pandemic reset and the insights of social psychologist Jonathan Haidt, Boys Latin implemented a bold door-to-door cell phone ban and reimagined their daily schedules. The conversation explores how these philosophical shifts translate into on-the-ground practice across all divisions, from junkyard-style creative playgrounds in the lower school to autonomous choice blocks and peer-led mornings in the middle and upper schools. They highlight how these high-impact, often low-cost adjustments cultivate a culture of connection, offering a practical roadmap for schools looking to foster genuine friendship and leadership amongst boys. Please note that IBSC programming will be back in the new year, with online programs including IBSC Research in Action in January, a session on agreeable disagreement, and the free IBSC Insights session with me in February, and an insightful presentation on boys' body image in March. February also sees the launch of three online classes, followed in March by the popular Teachers New to Boys' Schools course, timed perfectly for the start of the Southern Hemisphere academic year. Though, of course, new staff from all member schools are indeed welcome. Finally, four Ideas Lab groups beginning January and February, connecting directors of student affairs, school librarians, deputy and assistant heads, and leaders of professional development. Details, as always, and registration are on the IBSC website. Now, over to Bruce, my good friend Chris Post, and the team from the Boys Latin School of Maryland.
I'm sure those of you listening who attended the 2017 IBSC Annual Conference in Baltimore will remember, like I do, the warm welcome we got from the community at the Boys Latin School of Maryland. And as Tom mentioned in the introduction, I'm really pleased to be joined today by Headmaster Chris Post and members of the Boys Latin leadership team. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for coming on to Exploring Boys Education to share your experience with our global audience. And maybe, Chris, as we dive in, I could ask you to briefly introduce the folk who are on the conversation with you today, and then we can dive into the meat of this podcast, which is about the boy-friendly changes you've made at school.
Thanks, Bruce. Great to be together and be in your company. You're welcome back at Baltimore for the best crab feast you can find anytime you'd like. Members of our leadership team are part of the conversation today. Amy Weslosky is our head of upper school. Henry Melker is our head of middle school. And Greg Schnitzlein is our head of lower school. So Boys Latin, founded in 1844, is the oldest independent K-12 school for boys in the Mid-Atlantic area of the United States. Our program begins with 5-year-olds in kindergarten going through 12th grade or senior year.
Thanks, Chris, Henry, Amy, and Greg. Thank you for joining us. For those of you who don't know, in January 2025, Boys Latin was featured in an Insightful Education Week article, and I'm sure some of you have read it. I know we as IBSC shared that around. But it was featured for its school-wide boy-friendly changes. And so Chris and team are joining me to discuss the philosophy behind these changes and the practical on-the-ground difference they're making to boys of all ages at Boys Latin. I'm really excited about the fact, and you mentioned it, Chris, that this conversation will have something for everyone from kindergarten teachers to 12th grade advisors. But let's start here. I gather from the article that the changes you've made at Boys Latin were part of a reset following the pandemic. And I think many schools have been in that space where they've had to think through that. What are the specific challenges you are seeing in your boys, be it around screen time, social interaction, or mental health, that kind of served as a catalyst or a primary catalyst for the initiatives that we're going to speak about today?
Yeah, you know, look, I think it was an extraordinary period of time for schools and for educators over the past 5 years, contending with the challenges that COVID presented us. Our mission as a school is to foster enduring personal relationships with and among our students while inspiring each to strive for academic and personal excellence. So I think about March of 2020 when we were confronted with the challenges of what we didn't know would become a pandemic and the idea of transitioning into virtual learning and whatnot. And institutionally, we really focused on the front half of our mission, on fostering enduring personal relationships. So that meant that, you know, from March of 2020 through the end of our academic year, boys were in direct contact with teachers and with classmates every day for several hours a day. Right? Again, trying to reinforce that they weren't alone, that they weren't isolated. And we made the decision that spring of 2020, it was April or May, that we were bringing the boys back in whatever way that we could come the start of the next school year. Our lower school, almost every day of the week, our middle and upper school in a regular rotation where they were on campus directly more than they were not on campus. But again, I think the challenges of having hybrid learning in place, classes that were taught sequentially, spacing and all the rest made it difficult to have the kind of academic outcomes that we otherwise would have in a normal environment. But again, prioritizing relationship building. So there were trades that we made. You know, we used individual device communication an awful lot. We know that our boys were spending a lot more time outside than they otherwise would have in a typical day. K to 12, let alone just in the lower school. Coming out of 2023-24, we had seen a bunch of research, obviously. Richard Reeves talking about the significant isolation that boys and young men were experiencing here in the United States, that being part of, a global phenomenon. And then the work of Jonathan Haidt, which we might get into a little bit here as well. And you know, we as a leadership team made the decision it was time to give boyhood back to our boys. We can't control the global environment that they're in, but we can control what we can, you know, for the time that they're with us, you know, from first thing in the morning through the end of the day and the boys in our residential life program then. And we would use our own leadership agency, our courage to lead, to set some parameters that we thought would be best for boys.
Thanks for sharing. And you mentioned there Jonathan Haidt's work. And I know you were influenced by specifically the idea that we've overprotected boys in the natural world and underprotected them in the virtual world. I wonder if you can expand on this and, you know, what is the core philosophy that unites all the changes from K to 12? And what does giving boys more agency and choice really mean to Boys Latin?
So I picked up Jonathan Haidt's book in the first couple of weeks it was released. I was delayed flying from somewhere back to Baltimore. And, you know, early on in the introduction, I think he writes about this dichotomy in terms of the natural world and the artificial world or the electronic world. And that really, really caught my attention. I see it in children broadly, you know, if you walk around in public spaces where, you know, little kids are looking at screens and not interacting with other people, it struck a chord that we have an opportunity as a school to control some things and to turn back the tide a little bit. What does it mean to be overprotective in the natural world and underprotect in the artificial world? It means preventing boys from experiencing the natural consequences of cause and effect. Learning, you know, the habits of problem solving, team building, the skills of interacting and self-regulating in a way where adults are quick to rush in. I think we have seen here in the United States, at least, that kids' lives are so highly scripted and highly scheduled. There was far more time allotted for unstructured play when I was growing up. And now we just know that that's not the experience that kids typically have, particularly boys. On the artificial side, I remember meeting probably 15 years ago with two folks who were in their mid-20s who were helping the school understand this emerging phenomenon of social media. And they said, you know, with all respect, sir, we're digital natives and you're kind of a digital Neanderthal. That really resonated with me. But the reality, I think, is that for adults, so often we don't really fully understand what kids are experiencing as they're on screens. They have access to information, which is challenging on its best days, and it's really disturbing on its worst. And so, you know, there's that content piece of it. But then there is this, again, coming back to Summer Reeves's work, there's this disengagement that happens because of the over-reliance on screen technology. And I experienced it myself, just having been in the classroom for a period of time in 2023, you know, the distraction that's created by having a phone in the pocket. And, you know, as every other school, we'd ask our boys to keep them away. And the middle school certainly had boys checking phones in and things like that. But we know that, you know, it was there as a great distractor.
You know, I want to focus on that, one of the most significant changes, which connects with what you've been talking about now, which is that door-to-door ban on student cell phones. And you alluded to some of that. I know lots of schools are wrestling with this at the moment. I wonder if you could talk about the practical implementation of that before we dive into breaking some of the changes down by division. And what is the immediate impact you've seen from that door-to-door ban?
Again, just to come back contextually, I picked up Height's book, fascinated by it. I think I dropped it on admin middle of April. I said, here's your reading assignment. And there was a conversation that happened not long thereafter, like, okay, is this just the Trojan horse to ban cell phones? Like, well, yes and no. I mean, clearly, that's a place that I think we need to go. But it is much more about, you know, kind of reestablishing the natural order of things for boys. And you'll hear how in each division there are opportunities for boys to focus on their own personal growth and development, and also on relationship building in healthy and more appropriate ways. I was asked by several heads of school a couple of weeks into news having broken that we had taken this very bold stand to tell kids that there were limits on their use of screen technology. And, you know, how did you do it? How could you do it? And my response really simply is, we just did. We just know that that's what was best for boys. And, you know, we're fortunate to be part of a community that's built on trust, and our families trust us and the boys trust us. And we ask them to stretch, and they have. Our middle school head, Henry Melker, found online very sophisticated plastic and metal lockers that are each about $100. So that was a total of investment of $300, maybe. The upper school is a larger division than the middle school. So a different kind of investment there. I think our head of upper school went to a big box store, as they call it, and bought some of those plastic tubs for $5 each. And each advisory turns in the phone in the morning, and they're held in the teacher's classroom. The real investment was, again, it was an investment of trust. Trust that the boys have in the school, that faculty have with the boys and families all around. And it's made an enormous difference. I vividly recall the first week, people commenting how much louder it was in the hallways, how much louder it was in the dining hall, cafeteria, because kids aren't buried in their phones. They're actually engaging and talking with one another. And, you know, look, that the laughter in a boys' school is, you know, it should be the anthem that underpins everything for us. The other thing is that I recall one of our upperclassmen towards the end of the first week going to pick up his phone from his advisor. He picked it up. He turned it on. He said, oh, my gosh, I have 300 notifications. And my blink reaction was, this young man's gonna sit there and he's gonna start scrolling through his phone at the end of the day. And instead, he threw the phone on the table, took a deep sigh, sat down, and he began a conversation with his classmates. Even though their phones were there and they hadn't had their phones for almost 8 hours, they were far more interested in engaging with one another. Pretty amazing.
I suppose it's about establishing the new normal, right? It's
that's exactly right.
Apart from, you know, this kind of focus on technology and bringing boys back to engaging with each other, I think some of the key changes have been around space and time. And I'd like to dive into some of the kind of divisional changes, which I think are going to be really encouraging for folk as they listen to it. And maybe we can start at the lower school, Greg. And, you know, as I read about the changes you've made, you know, this creative playground that you have with old tires, crates, and even a fishing boat, I just wanted to get back to lower school. And you've also introduced the second recess before the school day even begins. And so I'd love you to just outline what difference you've seen in the boys who start their day with an unstructured pickup soccer or someone who just gets dropped off for first period. And how has kind of this change in the spaces, like your junkyard style playground, changed the way your boys play and interact?
Sure. Thank you. I think, you know, part of what we looked at was trying to figure out how to get our guys K to five, kindergarten through fifth grade, more opportunity to be outside. I think that's part of what Jonathan Haidt talks about in his work, but it's also what's best practice for boys. And I think we looked at, you know, we're already doing a lot of outside time as it was, but kind of the gaps in that. And if a boy got dropped off at our school at 7:30 in the morning, kind of started to progress through his day, really his first opportunity to move outside was several hours into the school day. And anybody who's worked with boys for a while will know that that's usually a recipe for restlessness and opportunities to do things that they probably shouldn't be doing. So I think for what we looked at, you know, and these were things that we spoke about too that came out of COVID. We were taking our boys and sending them straight into the school from 7:30 into this rolling admission. And really what we did was just open the playground and drop off started happening outside instead of happening straight into the building and classroom and giving those boys about 20, 25 minutes of extra recess in the morning. And I think what we saw first of all was attendance go up. Tardies were down, which is positive. The boys wanted to be outside. They were looking forward to it. And we got pickup, you know, football games here, American football games going for right off the bat and getting out there and getting opportunity to engage with their friends in a manner that they just didn't have the chance to do before. And I think that gave, you know, tired boys the ability to be energized. And I think energized boys the opportunity to get out and move around. And I think also boys who just wanted to sit and socialize an opportunity to do that as well. And I think so that was a huge, I want to say it's a win, but it was just an easy win to start the day. The teachers appreciated it as well that they're out there, that they could have that chance. And I think the only thing that really holds us back is that really bad weather days when we get that and we do our best to keep them out all the time. But I think all positive, I think from that end of it, the boys, on time at school, energized and more focused when they sat down for first period of classes.
And this junkyard style playground that you put together, I mean, I feel that gives boys a lot of, especially that age, a lot of autonomy, but also an opportunity to use their imaginations in play, which is something that they maybe don't experience at home or in other spaces.
Yes, in our publications, we call it the Creativity Playground. Our headmaster here, Mr. Post, is fond of calling it the junkyard. It's not too far from his house, so I think he gets a good view of it as well. But really, if you look in the back corner of our playground, we've got a pretty extensive area, but in the back, we have like a mulched out area that has, we have two boats, a canoe and a fishing boat that are out there. We have probably 50 or 60 milk crates, which are pretty sturdy and easy to build, some lumber and some old tires. And that is a combination, I think, for our boys that just has led to an amazing amount of creative play where we have a traditional, what I would consider be a very static playground, slides, swings, and the like on that. But I think what I've always found is that is the shelf life for anybody who's ever taken little kids to the playground. They eventually kind of run out of that imaginative play and they start doing other things. So, you know, we found that it taps into a certain type of boy, but it really on occasion taps into all sorts of boys who are now working as a team to build a structure out there. I am very fond of, at the end of the day, knocking down all the boys' work and then coming back the next morning and watching what they have done over the course of a day. And they will build amazing things and they will build very creative things, but they're out there doing it together. Last year we had fifth graders. I can remember distinctly who at night were making blueprints about what they were going to build and then bringing it back the next day and teaming up with their friends and then creating what they had designed. Recently, we had a really bad rainstorm. Our boat was clogged, so it was full of water. And I watched, you know, 10 boys out there who were taking buckets, emptying out the water. Another bunch were trying to figure out how to drain the water out of the bottom. And that was a good, you know, half hour of teamwork, engagement, and enthusiasm by some really young and creative young men.
And let's not forget the incidental learning that takes place as well in those environments, right?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Henry, maybe we could pivot to the middle school. And, you know, if I speak to folk who educate boys on that middle school age, you almost feel like it's herding cats. And sometimes they're all over the place. And yet you created a 40-minute block in the morning in the middle school, a choice block where boys can go to the gym or the library or time for open academics or like in some of the younger boys who just want to socialize. I want to ask you, why is giving a middle school boy the autonomy to make that choice, even if it's playing basketball, let's say, so critical for his development and buy-in for the rest of the academic day?
Yeah, great question. Thanks for having us all, Bruce, by the way. And also, your words, not mine, we love it in the middle school. Herding cats, you could say. We love it where the action is. I'm glad that you brought up our morning office hours, Bruce. It's how we start the day is so important, as you know. And also, as you know, the point of school, of course, is not to be good at school. The point of school is to be prepared for life. And so we have what we tried to do in pushing back the schedule, besides the really threading the needle of a couple of logistical points. One, making sure that we can still, if we're pushing back the start of our day from 8 to 8:30, that we can still accommodate families who are dropping off boys in the lower school and the middle school. So still having an option for earlier drop off. And two, aligning with upper school. We've got a ton of things that are available to kids. And it's in terms of what we try to do in the middle school is really put kids into the driver's seat and we try to build agency every day. So if for lower school, for example, an important benchmark is by the end of third grade, a boy should be reading to learn, not still learning to read. Hopefully by the end of their time in the middle school here, they're not still learning independence, but they're learning independently. And part of that goes to how they start the day. So we've got the breakfast club, which is in the commons. We've got open gym. We've got open field. And it's middle school, Bruce, so you better believe we've got a crew of like 25 or 30 kids who show up to first period every day, sweaty, smelling natural. We've got open academics in the library, which is you'll see a lot of card games. You'll see chess. You'll see board games. You might even see kids finishing up last night's homework, which is also, let's be real here, as adults, there's oftentimes where I get up early and get work done so I can start the day. And then really the bread and butter of that time is academic coaching, which is basically kids can set up a time with a teacher that they have of any of their subjects and go in and get caught up or get ahead or get some practice in before an upcoming quiz or test. And so really what the message that we're trying to send kids is in life, you have options of how you start your day. And it's the same thing here at school. And it matters the choices that you make. And what we found is that, you know, similar to Greg, if a kid needs to get some energy out, he's much more likely to have his butt in the seat with materials out and be ready for class at the first period bell at 8:30. As opposed to someone who just sort of shows up, wanders into school, they have their materials maybe, and then school is starting, but they're not ready for it.
I love how you talk about that one-on-one time with teachers, those boys who really need to connect with teachers. And there's a sense for me that's really about self-advocacy And so often middle school boys, you know, their parents are often responsible for things and not the boy. How are you seeing, or how do you teach them the skill of self-advocacy, of showing up, of making those appointments with teachers? And what is the impact that you're seeing as they start taking responsibility for those things rather than their parents?
Well, there's a lot of learning that happens. It's certainly, we don't just float the expectation and immediately everybody's picking up on it. You know, it's similar to, so we teach the boys every last day of our cycle, we teach them to write a reflective email home to their parents about their academic progress, where they share out their grades and their action steps moving forward. And so when you tell a sixth grader to write an email home to their parents, they don't just do it. And so we start them out with the script, and then we put in another scaffold of just a criteria for success of things that their email should include. And then eventually we pull all that back and just leave them to write it. So it's pretty similar in how you actually have to explicitly teach different avenues of how boys can engage their teachers. So we open up time. We have a 20-minute advisory block during the middle of the day where we can have kids going around to – we have teachers actually say to kids, now is the time if you check in with the teacher and set up a time for office hours tomorrow. Now is the time to go do that. Write them a pass and they can go do that. We also give them a menu at the start of the year. I mean, in terms of building habits in middle school, it's so important that we build them early and often. So we give them a menu of ways that you can engage your teacher, times a day that you can engage your teacher. We really prefer to go in person as opposed to emails. There's already enough email in life, I know, for everybody on this call, but also just for kids, it's much more direct to find a teacher. And luckily, you know, we have 150 boys in the middle school, so it's very easy to find an adult during the day. But if I'm being just completely honest with you, Bruce, it's trial and error, and it takes a lot of learning for a lot of our guys to actually get there with proactively, regularly setting up time during office hours. The impact of those guys who do is that we see boys. I'm thinking of one boy right now who we just had quarter one conferences, who midway through first quarter had something like the upper 60s in eighth grade algebra and was able to finish out, make up a ton of ground and finish out with like borderline 89 or 90, 91, because he was able to regularly set up that time with his eighth grade teacher, come into office hours, work with him. And it's not just about getting his grades up. It's about improving his long-term understanding so that he's ready for his next step in math when he goes to the upper school.
And everything's a journey, right? I mean, we don't want a middle school boy to necessarily be a finished product. It's about helping him in that phase of life be the best he can be and understand who he is moving forward into upper school, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, Amy, I'm really excited to talk to you about upper school. I was a high school English teacher myself, so I'm always fascinated by what folk are doing in the upper school. And you've moved to a 9 a.m. academic start, I believe. But the biggest change really was moving all the optional peer-led clubs to 8 a.m., so replacing that dead time and putting that time before academics. What has this scheduling change done for the culture of these student-run organizations and also the developments of student leadership in the upper school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when, you know, up until this is our third year doing this, really flipping the whole schedule. So, you know, boys at 8 o'clock learning also are quite different than they're just a little bit later in the day as a high school teacher that was trying to, you know, have 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds ready for, you know, forensic science at 8 a.m. is much different than later in the day. And then we've seen, like, what we were noticing is in the afternoon, kids are tired. They're running to sports. They have all these other responsibilities in the afternoon. So how can we create a space in the morning that kind of slowed down their day, but actually started their day more intentionally? So we did flip the day. And, you know, while the kids can get in at 7 a.m. in the morning, a lot of kids are already coming still at, you know, from 7 to 8. We have a wide variety of kids here. At 8 o'clock, that's kind of when our official day starts, though. We have clubs, and we have meet clubs on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And that Wednesday is really set aside for teacher learning and professional development then in the morning, which I felt was also super important to do that in the morning. But it really gives kids an opportunity to they could join into four different clubs, maybe a week, but we have over 37 different student ran clubs for a school of, only 320 boys. It's pretty amazing. Most of our boys, on average will be in about two or three clubs, which is just amazing in the morning. And all of those clubs, like you mentioned, are student ran. So, they have a faculty advisor. I'm a faculty advisor for a club, but really it all is driven by the students. Like, we do not just continue clubs year after year, even if kids graduate and they're leaders. If they don't have a following and a natural fit into our school, then they don't continue to run. So, it's not ran by the teachers, which this year I think we've seen the most different creative clubs, just because I think kids really now are seeing that agency that they have to really bring something different that they might have a passion for. We have a club that's all about just talking about sports in the morning. Like, they just talk about, it's almost like they're little sports counselors in the morning and hashing it over, So it's just one of those things that someone loves to do that with his buddies. So he made a club and a space that's what it happens. But, really the student engagement, I think, with our clubs has been through the roof. In the afternoon, whether it was competing with finishing academic work or running off to sports or picking up your younger brother, there's too many competing, factors in the afternoon. But that set aside time in the morning really has just boosted engagement. And I think it really promotes collaboration between boys, because if they found an interest, now they found these other people that have that similar interest. And also just the student leadership of it, because now many of our clubs have been running for years, our younger boys look to those student leaders and aspire to be a leader of that club, which I think is pretty amazing. We have one love club here at school, and which promotes healthy relationships. And it is a vie after spot to be a student leader when you're a senior, that there's interviews and there are, really, it's really important, the students that are running that club, because they dictate everything really that happens K through 12, because that club does really touch every part of our school. So, it's that responsibility and interdependence of the boys that is really, I think, just been the best thing, and amplifying student voice. That's what you always want to do. You don't want to hear from adults. Like, what are you hearing from kids? I think is most important.
What strikes me most about this is that boys are doing multiple clubs, and a lot of other schools where,
yes,
where you maybe don't have that time at the beginning of the day, and that boys are time poor. Boys might be in one club, but here they're exposed to a whole host of different interests. And I think, part of, I remember Tom Batty saying at a stage, we want boys to be interested, but also interesting. And part of being interesting is discovering things that you never thought of dipping your toe into before. So it's so exciting for me to hear that your boys are getting this well-rounded exposure to so many things.
Yeah, and it's just a wide variety, whether they're in mock trial, but then they're in the Michelin Men, who is just like the Michelin star chefs that we kind of coined it after, that they get together and they make food, So there's a wide variety. And somebody, those kids can find a passion in food that they may have never realized before. Or, the investment club, which has been in super super interesting and, really a linchpin for the boys too.
That's amazing. I'm keen just to hear a little bit more about sort of this emphasis on peer leadership. What kind of impact has that had in sort of tangible real world applications beyond the clubs, in terms of mentoring others, developing new skills, creating a stronger sense of community, things like that?
Yes, I think because of the clubs and some clubs, there may be over 30 members, but some clubs might be smaller, whether it's 5 to 7. So I think that really lends itself to, create different bands of leadership in different clubs, which is nice. But what I think I have noted most throughout campus is that way that, they have to promote their club. So we have a club fair. So they're standing in the hallway, kind of almost, they're publicizing their club. So how are they getting people excited for something that they're interested in? Which I think then, it goes to all of that engagement. How do you engaging anyone when you are trying to get a job, when you are trying, when you're on a team. So, I mean, that those skills really can permeate every portion of their life. And it gives them that confidence to be, you know, whether it around their peers or adults, because a lot of our clubs also may run assemblies. So it gives an opportunity for them to stand up in front of the whole upper school, if not middle and lower school, to present. And I think by having that structure of just student run leadership, maybe in a small setting, it has given them, empowered them then to be leaders throughout the building. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were on a, we were with another school, and there were people interviewing them from, you know, the news, but it gives them, like, they know that that is going well beyond our community, but it, they were poised and ready to present, you know, their passion for their club, which I think, you know, will only help them in volumes as, you know, we prepare them for the next step in college and beyond, which I think is really important. And I think what I think that is, though, the little boys seeing the big boys doing that, I think is valuable, too, because our guys do, our upper schoolers do a lot with the middle schoolers and the lower schoolers, you know, the lower schoolers treat them like rock stars, you know, so, when, but then we always make sure they have to really care for that responsibility and leadership, because little people are always watching you too. So what are you going to do with that kind of power, if you will?
I think it's important to note, Bruce, that as a K to 12 school that prides itself on fostering enduring personal relationships, we use the structure of the school to show leadership or to have boys develop leadership through mentoring all the way through. So in the upper school, our students will go into the lower school and be Laker buddies as part of a student-led program. Where they're in the classrooms and on the playground, teaching boys how to be good friends and problem solve and all the rest. That also happens upper school with middle school. It happens lower school within the lower school when the fifth graders, which is, we believe that the appropriate terminal point for lower school or junior education, to go back down to kindergarten, pre-first and first grade and read books and play on the playground. In the middle school, there is connection between middle school and lower school as well. We know that boys do well with intergenerational mentoring. And when they have both the opportunity to provide that mentoring and receive that mentoring, you know, there's tremendous growth that can happen. You asked the question about what does this mean, you know, not just in terms of the school experience, but in terms of preparation for life. We simply know that this is real world hands-on application of the kinds of things that our boys will do when they're off in college and in life beyond working. So incredibly important. And again, coming back to the genesis of our conversation, if Reeves's premise is accurate that boys and young men are experiencing greater and greater isolation. And one of the antidotes for that is to see in other and particularly older boys what good and healthy relationships and decision-making looks like. Again, we have an opportunity to use the structure of our school to provide that for our boys.
Yeah. I'm so inspired by listening to all of you, and I'm grateful for your time. And I want to end with one last question, maybe some advice around if a school wants to begin this journey tomorrow of thinking about space and time and connection. What would that first step be that you would recommend, based on your experience, to start making their campuses and their time and the student experience more boy-friendly?
I really think it comes down to the mission of the institution and having, you know, in our case, we're blessed with a leadership team that not only embraces the mission, but lives it out every day. In our mission, you know, we do have these mutually valued concepts of fostering enduring personal relationships while inspiring and empowering boys to strive for academic and personal excellence. The idea that, you know, each boy should be able to grow to his fullest potential, whatever that might look like, and it's a range. All of the other decisions stem from that. So whether it is the extraordinary investment in lockers and plastic bins, or, you know, being a place that receives the cast-offs from people's backyards and boathouses or whatever else, knowing that we only get one chance with each boy every day, and we want to make sure that the environment physically, but especially, I think, emotionally, is best suited for his growth and development. That's what drives everything.
Well, Greg, Amy, Henry, and Chris, what a wonderful conversation this has been. I know folks are going to be inspired. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. And thank you for your willingness to share your journey and your experience with the rest of the IBSC community. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bruce.
The Boys Latin School of Maryland offers a powerful example of what happens when we prioritize human connection over digital convenience. By implementing a door-to-door phone ban and reimagining the daily schedule from junkyard creative play in the lower school to autonomous choice blocks and peer-led clubs in the upper years, Chris Post and his team have effectively given boyhood back to the boys. These intentional, boy-centric structural changes provide a practical roadmap for fostering the agency and genuine relationships our students need most. My sincere thanks to Chris, Amy, Henry, and Greg for sharing their journey. Until our next episode, keep on championing boys' education.